So yesterday morning, I got up early, and I was going to bring together all the commentaries and articles that I had been reflecting on during the week as I was thinking about the sermon I would preach to you today. As soon as I ushered my wife and child out the door to go spend a day in New York City with Kai's cousin, I snuggled up with my laptop on the sofa, and about 5 minutes into working, the power went off. The power on half the block was out thanks to a utility project next door. And since the electricity didn't show any sign of coming back anytime soon, I threw my laptop into my backpack, slung my backpack over my shoulder, and hopped onto a bus into New York City, since that night I was planning to be there anyway to celebrate my friend Emily's birthday party. I spent the first hour in a coffee shop gathering the snippets of ideas that had sparked me in my preparation and reading that I had done the earlier week. Knowing that it was the Lunar New Year this weekend and that we would be celebrating it in worship the next weekend, I had stumbled upon the Korean word "puk," which means blessing in Korean. One article I had read was comparing Korean notions of "puk" with Jesus' meaning of blessing. Now, coincidentally, the two people who were sitting near me in an alcove of chairs in a coffee shop using the free Wi-Fi in the cafe were young Korean Americans. I couldn't help but overhear their conversation, which wandered from topics of the quickly changing U.S. immigration policies to relationships with first-generation Korean Americans. And I thought, oh, they should read Angie Chung's new book that has just come out and is excellent. When I heard their conversation starting to wrap up as they were getting ready to leave, I gained the courage to ask them their opinion of the meaning of the Korean concept of "puk," or blessing. We had a very interesting conversation. They told me that in Korea, "puk," or blessing, is based very much on Korean shamanistic traditions. At the Lunar New Year, it is customary for younger children to bow to their elders and tell them, "May you receive the blessings of the new year." And by saying the words and eating the rice cake soup that is served at the end of the ritual, the blessing will become more real. But, said these young adults, who are also Christian, the idea of blessing in Korea is not the same kind of blessing Jesus offers. Why not? I asked. "Puk" in Korea usually points you toward wealth. Jesus' blessings point us more toward God. With that, they took off and left me to ponder the depth of this statement from my very non-Korean perspective as I once again sorted through commentaries. After they left, two new people moved in to share the cushioned chairs in the cafe. By then, I was back into a writing zone, or so I thought, when I noticed one of them, a young South Asian man, laughing while looking out the window and nodding his approval. I followed his gaze and with him watched a man outside in a knit cap lower a string down the subway grate and then pulling it back up. At the end of the string was attached a dollar bill. We gave him a thumbs up through the window as we pondered the mechanics of how he got that dollar bill to stick to the end of a string. I stared back at my computer screen, trying to return to my train of thought, when finally I closed my computer. I told those working around me that I'm a pastor working on a sermon, but I don't think this sermon is going to come from my screen. I think it might be outside of this computer. And so, after shutting down my computer, I walked outside to have a conversation with the man in the string, pulling stuff out of the subway grate. It wasn't long before the other man from the cafe, who I learned is named Levana, was right behind me. Ilia Santos is known on the streets as Fisherman. He uses a long piece of dental floss, and at the end of it is tied a fishing weight, and on the end of that is a huge glob of mousetrap glue. On a good day, he told Levana and me, he finds up to $100. On a really great day, which has happened just a few times, he has found $1,000 or more. I encountered fishermen in the Flatiron District, but he mostly works from there up to Times Square, where the majority of tourists who lose a lot of stuff hover. While fishermen get excited about finding money, he also shares in great joy when he feels he can help someone recover something that was lost. He has helped with iPhones, keychains, and on one occasion, he found a wedding ring. For the very personal things, he doesn't ask for any reward. He returns them to their owners without a request for money. But with that wedding ring, the woman who lost it stayed in touch with fishermen for a year later, writing him every month and sending him $100 because she was so deeply grateful to have restored to her this remembrance of her husband who was deceased. Helping others, he told me, that's what makes me feel blessed. And he continued, story after story of blessings he had discovered. It occurred to me that fishermen who had shared with me that he is homeless, that he is in recovery for his addictions, and who has a disability that, if not taken care of, will result in the amputation of both his legs. Fisherman is more ready to receive blessing than many of us will ever be. Jesus said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of people." I am convinced that there is some aspect of blessing that gathers us in a net together with God's people. And yesterday, I felt like God was showing me that I would find blessing by opening my ears and seeing and noticing the people around me and what they were telling me. As the day progressed, and I talked to more and more people, I heard an increasing anger and disappointment on America's new policy that has closed doors to immigrants from 7 different countries. It did not matter whether they were refugees or recruits from some of the nation's top educational institutions. At customs, they were detained. When I arrived at my friend Emily's birthday party that night, Emily announced, "I kind of wish that I had scheduled my birthday party to be at JFK Airport so we could join the others protesting what is happening so fast." Levana, who was at my coffee shop earlier, spoke of how he, as an Indian American man, has been harassed in the streets of New York City several times since November, whereas in his many years of study in the U.S., including when he was studying engineering at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, people never insulted him because of his race or because of his Hindu beliefs and practice. His friend who was working alongside him is a white woman of Polish descent, and she said that one day recently while she was ordering kebab from a halal kiosk in the city, two white men screamed at her that she should stay away from those terrorists. The Christian Century magazine reports that 91% of the U.S. Congress identifies as Christian. This country's president says that he is Christian. And yet, the policies coming out of Washington in the last week and the behavior they encourage do nothing but curse the poor in spirit, and more specifically, the literal poor, which Luke's Sermon on the Plain clearly claims are the blessed ones. Pope Francis gave a message to a gathering of Lutherans and Catholics together, and it was a message that Christians of all stripes should agree with. You cannot be a Christian without living like a Christian, he said. You cannot be a Christian without practicing the Beatitudes. You cannot be a Christian without doing what Jesus teaches in Matthew 25. That is where Jesus says, "For I was hungry and you fed me." For as much as you do it for the least of these, you do it for me. The Pope continued, "It is hypocrisy to call yourself a Christian and chase away a refugee or someone seeking help, someone who is hungry or thirsty. Toss out someone who is in need of my help," he said. "If I say I am a Christian but do these things, I am a hypocrite." Does it feel sometimes like the values of Christianity somehow got dropped into the grates of the subway, left and forgotten? We need a fisherman to pull out a string and anchor and mousetrap glue to search for these values and pull them out so that we can hold them again. For in seeking our own reward, we are shutting the door to blessing all around us. The thing about Jesus' understanding of blessing, and this is very countercultural, is that it shows God to be God of the destitute, the God of the poor and the wronged. It shows that Jesus is sitting in the detention areas of JFK Airport or Dulles, among those cursed by these new policies and by the long and difficult journey it took to get here, and by the reasons that may have brought them to America in the first place, such as a rejection of violence and a hope that their children could survive and have a decent life. God is with them, saying, "Oh no, you have it all wrong. These are my blessed ones. Don't you see? Don't you see?" God is near them now. And when we fail to see that, we place our lives one step or many steps from God. If it feels to you that Christian meaning has been lost, I am convinced that as a community, we can together find and reclaim it. This is not an "I alone can do this" kind of faith. This is something in which we really need each other to pray and to support, to challenge and to call out hypocrisy when we see it, and to stay humble because we will mess up and we will sometimes try to put ourselves first. It is hard work. So where is our reward? I would argue that our reward does not only wait for us in a spiritual afterlife. Our reward is something we live now, and it may not look like what we would expect. Martin Luther, catalyst for the Protestant Reformation, said, "This life, therefore, is not righteousness, but growth in righteousness. Not health, but healing. Not being, but becoming. Not rest, but exercise. We are not yet what we shall be, but we are growing toward it. The process is not yet finished, but it is going on. This is not the end, but it is the road. All does not yet gleam in glory, but all is being purified." Now, if I can quote both Martin Luther and the Pope in the same sermon, there is hope for the collective witness we Christians can make. That hope is the teachings of Jesus. That hope is the prophet Micah saying, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God?" Let us reach deep and rediscover what it is that gives meaning in this practice of being Christian. Let us rediscover it together. Or perhaps some of us might not be rediscovering it, yet they might be finding it as a first-time treasure. And that is a joy too. I am blessed to be on this journey with you and with Jesus. Amen.